Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
Hello and welcome to the January edition of Wireless here on Flirt FM 101.3 in Galway and on flirtfm.ie. I'm John Walsh and I'll be with you for the next hour. A warm welcome also to our listeners on Phoenix FM in Dublin, Claremorris Community Radio in Mayo, Wired FM in Limerick, Atlantic Radio in Cork and WGXC in Greene County, New York. Wireless is the radio programme all about radio, local, regional and national broadcasters, pirate and free radio, DAB and podcasting and radio's history and future prospects. This month we bring you a special programme to commemorate the 30th anniversary of the close down of Irish Pirate Radio on New Year's Eve 1988.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
Many of you will know that I'm one of the people behind an audio archive to commemorate Irish pirate radio history, which is now available at pirate.ie. Together with radio activist and researcher Brian Green in Dublin, over the past year we've been dusting down and digitising old cassettes and doing interviews with people involved in the Irish pirate era up to the close downs of 1988. Our aim is to build an open archive containing historical recordings and oral histories of that period, drawing on our own material and on donations. Nations from others. There's some excellent stuff online already, particularly the DX archive in the UK, but some of it is very scattered and not easy to find, and of course there's a risk that the platforms where it's stored, such as Mixcloud or Soundcloud, may not last forever. So to ensure that valuable Irish radio history isn't lost, our aim is to build a sustainable archive for future generations of radio enthusiasts and researchers. Pirate.ie is in the early stage of development, but over the holiday period we streamed hundreds of hours of archival recordings and interviews, and we bring you a selection of that in our special programme today.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
So let's start with some archival material related to the west of Ireland. Galway had a variety of pirate stations in the past, ranging from Saor Radio Chonamara in 1970, which led to the creation of RTE Radio na Gaeltachta, to the unique political station Radio Pirate Woman, run by activist Margareta Darcy, to larger commercial operations such as Atlantic Sound and Coast 103. Coast was one of the bigger stations in Galway, and in 1987 merged with another station in Limerick, Hits 954. Here are some idents from both stations and an announcement that they had come together to serve the West and Midwest.
Broadcasting to the Midwest and the West 24 hours a day on AM and FM stereo. This is Coast Hot Hits.
All Hit Radio.
It's a bad Michael Jackson weekend right here on Coast Hot Hits 103.
Broadcasting 24 hours a day, we are Hits 954, AM and stereo FM.
Take two great radio stations. Together they make Coast Hits 954, the country's first pan-western broadcasting medium. Coast Hits 954, music radio for Galway, Limerick and surrounding areas 24 hours a day. We'll see you soon.
In October, as part of the preparations for Pirate.ie, we organised a meeting of ex-pirates in Dublin. And from now till the end of the programme, we bring you a flavour of those interviews from the points of view of the listeners, the broadcasters and the technicians. We hear a lot from the people who were on air as pirates, but it's rarer to get the view of a listener from that period. The hardcore listeners were DXers, people who listened out for faint, distant signals, particularly on AM. In this interview, DXer Patricia Loughlin from Dublin tells Lee McGowran her memories of listening to covert stations from Dublin to the former Iron Curtain.
I originally started listening to the radio in Raheny, where I was living, when I was in my late teens. And I used to listen to shortwave radio and then all sorts of radio, including the Irish Pirates.
Very nice. And you're donating something to DCU's archive. Could you explain exactly what they are?
I have a few what are called QSL cards, which some of the pirate radio stations sent out, not all could afford to. People like me listening to the shortwave radio were called DXers, and we would send in to the radio station a reception report of how good their signal was, what sort of interference there was, that kind of thing. And it was supposedly to help their engineers with their settings on their transmitters. And some of them would send back what was called a QSL, which is often a postcard of the town they were in, or some of them had them specially printed. And I have a few, only a few, but a few of the Dublin stations. It was kind of like a hobby. You would have a list of stations and you would try to get as many of them as you could. It was kind of like train spotting on the radio.
Okay. Did you do it so you would get the postcards back, or was it more just to keep the stations up and running properly?
It was a bit of both, though it was very exciting to be getting post, you know, from all over the world. Every day there'd be something in the post.
So how many stations would you say over the years? How long did you do it for, firstly?
I did it for about 3 years, and I got better at it and got a better radio. Although I never got the ultimate radio at that time to get would have been a Yaesu Munson F4G7, but that was like £400 in those days, so there's no way I was getting that. But I got a Soviet Vega radio, which was quite good at shortwave, and I suppose I got all continents. The one that most pleased me was a local Sydney radio station that I picked up. Not Radio Australia, it was a local station, but just because of the way the atmospherics were, the signal bounced to Ireland, and that was very cool.
That's very interesting. So what years what have you been doing this for?
It would have been 78, 79, 80, about then. So you had the DDR, you had all these countries that don't exist anymore, Yugoslavia, they were all there, so...
So I guess guide me through the process of how you would actually do it, like how this hobby works. Like how do you actually make it happen?
You would have your shortwave radio and you would painstakingly go up the dial until you heard hopefully somebody speaking in English and hopefully clear enough that you could understand them. And every so often they would have a station ident that they would usually give their address, and you would write in and it was called a SINPO, a signal, interference, noise, propagation, and an overall score. And you would send that in, each one out of five, and you send it in. So a very good station would be coming in at 55455, for example. That would be like the way if you were listening to RTE at the moment, it would be a clear signal. some of the weaker ones would be much lower, but it still would help them if they're sending it to you from, you know, some little shack in Aberdeen. It helps them to know that it's getting as far as Dublin, you know.
And how often would you do this? Like, was this every night or kind of on the weekends?
Every night. That's such an active social life, me and the radio. Most evenings, yes. With the headphones, because it would drive my family mad as I went up through the stations. Drive them crackers, you know.
So you mentioned you got postcards from many continents. Over, like, would you have an estimate of how many stations would you have sent things back to and also got postcards back from?
Probably a couple of hundred. I just actually found them there the other night when I was looking for these. Probably a couple of hundred. Some stations you got loads, like Radio Moscow, because of course for a lot of the international stations there was a propaganda element to it as well, you know, because even our rain is wetter in the Soviet Union, you know, that kind of, there was lots of broadcasts like that telling us about yield, grain yields in East Germany and Romania.
Would the stations in other countries also have been pirate radio stations, or did you ever do stuff for community stations as well, like legal?
There were some protest radio stations that would be jammed. That was quite cool. Actually, I'm only after remembering that now. You would listen to something like Radio Free Berlin, and you would get maybe the first few minutes of a program, and then this noise would come that was the Soviets jamming it. So there were some stations like that, yeah.
Do you have any other examples of, I guess, like actually witnessing a station getting jammed or raided?
There were these weird stations that the rumor always was that it was spies being given their instructions. I have no idea what it was, but it would be just a series of numbers, random numbers being read out. I have no idea what they were. But we all thought they were spies getting their coded messages.
So you could have been hearing classified information, wouldn't even know.
James Bond.
It's very interesting. Would you know of any other people who did this sort of hobby? Like, was this a common thing, or was it just more like, is it selective?
It wasn't very common among girls. There was one girl I was at school with who unfortunately died there recently. She was also a DXer. And actually how we got into it was from listening to Radio Sweden about ABBA. And then you discover that there are these stations broadcasting in English to other countries. And then from that, then you get into the local stations and the pirate stations and the small little ones. It surprised me how little equipment you needed, because I went up to visit one of Peter Gibney's stations. At the time, he was calling it Radio Caroline Dublin, from the back of his parents' house in Santry. And really, there wasn't that much equipment. You know, you think because you hear something on the radio, it must be some big professional outfit. It doesn't have to be at all, you know.
So did you ever work with any other people? You mentioned that girl who you worked with. No. Did you ever work with her?
No, only on a sort of competitive basis. We'd both be waiting for the Radio Kuwait QSL. So when I got it first, she was a bit sickened, but... Other than that, no.
So let's describe the actual equipment you would use to do this.
Mine was just, it was a retail bought one. I know some people would build their own radios and have very fancy marine quality radios. But mine was a Vega radio built by the Soviets. It weighed a ton. And I would say you could drive a tank over it and probably still would work. But that was Soviet build quality. But it was quite pricey. I think it cost £49 in those days, which was a substantial amount of money, you know.
But was there any legality issues for doing that kind of thing? Or
no.
Like, on your part, it was what you're doing completely safe?
No, I mean, the listening, there was no problem. And I had no issue myself with the pirates, because at the time, you were coming up towards the legalization of or bringing in commercial radio, because it was ridiculous that the English could have lots and lots of stations and we were stuck with RTE, you know. I think it was just Radio 1 at that time. But I didn't have an issue with all the small, you know, when later on Treble TR and all these Bray Local Radio, all these other ones that came out. There was a need there which they filled, which still, there's still gaps in the market. Even today, that there are still, I suppose, what are technically pirate stations filling. Yeah.
Do you have any examples of, I suppose, your favourite pirate stations, or any other good examples of anecdotes of pirate radio?
I did like ARD, Alternative Radio Dublin. They were based in Belvedere Place, and I used to enter a lot of competitions with them. I remember winning Dance Away by Roxy Music on single. And I had T-shirts, which of course they're all gone now. But if I'd known, we should have kept them. But I liked ARD. They were quite, you know, as I said, they were quite a professional outfit. A number of people who were with them went on then. When everything became legal, they went on to Radio 2 and all these other stations.
DXer Patricia Loughlin from Dublin speaking to Lee McGowran.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at WirelessFlirt.
Most of the recordings of Irish pirate radio are of the Dublin stations. That's no surprise, as the pirate scene in Dublin was busier than anywhere else, and the bigger and most successful stations such as Sunshine and Radio Nova broadcast from the capital. However, every smaller city and town in Ireland had its own station, and some of those were fairly big and successful in their own right. One such example were the pirates in County Louth, such as Boyneside Radio and Radio Carousel, who expanded to cover North County Dublin and Meath, and also beamed opt-out services across the border to Armagh, Down and beyond. Here's a flavour of Boyneside Radio.
We've got it, the great sound of today, bubbling Boyneside Radio, in touch with you. Boyneside Radio.
Weather forecast for this evening. Winds becoming southwesterly and blustery, but will decrease overnight to light and moderate, with temperatures 7 to 11 degrees Celsius. Showers will also clear tonight. I'll be back in an hour's time with more news.
The lottery that outsells because it excels. Drogheda Community Lottery. I back that.
To advertise on the Boyneside Network, just phone our office at Navan 22566, Drogheda 37242, Dundalk 71736, and our northern office on Annalong 68756.
The sound of Boyneside Radio from County Louth in recordings from 1988. A group of ex-pirates from the Northeast have contributed their memories to pirate.ie, and we bring you the first part of that interview now.
We're joined by Richard McCullen, formerly known as Mike Ahern, Michael Hughes and Eddie Caffrey, all from County Louth and with lots of memories about radio and Louth. So Eddie, can you give us a brief rundown of the radio stations that you were involved in during the pirate era?
Well, my first was Radio Dundalk. I came across it by accident. I think we were just talking about, was it the 7th or the 14th? I have recordings of it. And I heard this man, Michael Hughes. He was Michael Harrison, and he was doing a show, and he was going on and off the air, and he said, we might be drifting up and down the band, but you'll find us somewhere. Yeah. And that was my first taste of local radio. You know, I had visited Radio Dublin before that, just after the split. I got a guy called Kieran Murray invited me up, and by the time I got to Sarsfield Road, the split had happened. So I said, Kieran Murray invited me. I was nearly shot because Kieran had left and gone to Big D. But anyhow, that's where I started on Radio Dundalk. My first show was the 22nd of August or May, because it came on the 20th.
Which year is this?
1978.
Yeah,
my first show was at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah. My first record was "O Carol" by Smokey, and coincidentally, the same day, Radio Carousel opened officially on the 20th of May, the same day as Radio Dundalk opened. And as far as I can remember, Radio Dundalk was only supposed to be on at weekends. So when Carousel came on full time, we said we have to go for this full time, lads.
Okay. So was Radio Dundalk then relatively short-lived?
Oh, it went on for about almost a year, I think it did. Okay. It did go on for about a year, but Radio Carousel had the upper hand.
And Michael, did you move over to Carousel as well?
No, I stuck with the Radio Dundalk. Actually, on the 13th of May, we say, because we think we're a week before Carousel.
1978.
In 1978. Yeah. And it was quite an amazing experience because we were there with a set of decks, just ordinary DJ decks, on the floor of a house in the Armagh Road.
Nobody lived in it.
And we had our technician outside, and we obviously said, can you hear me? And he says, yeah, I can hear you. Now, the thing that I think is wonderful is we're Radio Dundalk on 220 metres medium wave. If you can pick up our signal, please ring 0423, whatever the number was. Within minutes or 20 minutes, half an hour, the phone started ringing. Now, this is a period where we didn't have all the radio stations we have now, but I could not get into my head. What were all these people doing with the radios, going up and down, looking for... And the phone continued and continued to ring. It got to a stage that you could not put the phone back in its holder, that it would ring again. And to me, that was extraordinary. And the power of radio and the want that people really wanted. They wanted to hear pop music. They wanted to do... That was the whole new thing to come. We were a small station. We had a wonderful time.
Was it low power?
We had low power.
It was, yeah.
And then Eddie came along with a bit of a boosted up our transmitters and that, which helped us an awful lot. And then we moved from where we were to the Fairways Hotel. Businesses got involved, wanted us. Every raided on occasions.
Oh, we were raided on, I remember as well, because it was the day of the Northern Parades on the 12th of July.
Yeah.
And the breakfast show... Mickey had been doing the breakfast show, and he was doing plumbing as well, and his brother the plumber was giving out Mickey turning up at 11 o'clock every day. So Mickey said, I have to retire and do maybe part time. So I was friends with a guy who owned a pub in Drogheda, and I played at 21st in it. He said, I have a young brother who's just done his leaving cert. He's gone on to do law in September, but he wants a summer job as a DJ, and his name was Liam Duffy. And when he came into the radio station to do the breakfast show, we said, we can't use Liam Duffy. You have to change your name. And he thought about it for a while and said, I'll go for Gavin Duffy. And that's where it all started.
So Gavin Duffy's real name is Liam Duffy?
Yes. Well, that's common knowledge at this stage, anyhow. Yeah. Well, obviously you've changed it. Ideal poet or something by now. He wouldn't be able to go for president.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah,
but,
but anyhow, that's how he started. No, and it was only for the summer. He didn't have a car. He used to hitch a lift. And somebody going doing the breakfast show on Radio Carousel, as far as I remember, would from time to time give him a lift and drop him off at the fairways. And that man is Richard McCullough.
Richard McCullough, tell us about your involvement.
Well, I joined Radio Carousel a few days after it had come on air. I was playing background music in a department store in Drogheda, and Michael Common, who's now with RTE, I knew him, and he came over and he told me and said, did you hear about this radio station in Dundalk? And I said, I read something in the paper about it. He said, there's a guy's number, Hugh Hardy's number in Dublin. I think he's looking for disc jockeys. And I rang the number. Hugh's wife took the message. Hugh called me back. And I started the next morning, but only after I'd given him a handwritten list of what tunes I was going to play on the station. He was very, very selective in what would go out on air.
What did he want?
He wanted basically middle-of-the-road music and poppy music. And if there was a bit of country thrown in, so well and good. He didn't want heavy metal at 7 o'clock in the morning. Mind you, I don't think many people did at that time. But that's how I started there. I subsequently stayed with Radio Carousel in Dundalk. Then a number of years later, they opened a sister station in Navan in County Meath. I would do a show in Dundalk in the morning, another one at lunchtime in Dundalk, drive to Navan and do one in the evening. As well as that, he had opened a station called Midlands Radio,
Athlone
Shopping Centre, yes.
Athlone, you had the station in Athlone?
He had, yes.
And for a week or two, I drove from Dundalk after I'd finished my programme there over to Athlone to do one, and then drove home. And invariably, then you would do a disco that night, you know, just to round off the day. After 7 years with Radio Carousel and driving round, I figured it's only a matter of time before I crash because of the laws of averages. Boyneside were on my doorstep, and I happened to accidentally bump into the owner of Boyneside, Eban MacDonald. We had a chat. I think he ran the broad outline of the chat past Eddie Caffrey, who nodded, and I joined Boyneside, and that's how my involvement with them came around. So in all, it was 10 years of magical mayhem. I think that's the only way to describe it, because you could do whatever you wanted within reason. You could try things out. I remember presenting budget specials on Radio Carousel after a couple of years. You would line up people to talk to, and after a while I think people realized there was more to what they called pirate radio and I called pre-legal radio than non-stop music. And it expanded from there and did all the hard work, basically, for the licensed stations when they came on.
Yeah,
and they were able to just piggyback on what we had been doing.
I remember the Boyneside News Service. I mean, you had a decent local news service. It was respectable. It was anything as good as what any local station would have today.
But that was one of the great selling points. Where else would you get local news other than on a local station? And luckily, I was allowed to do the news. Yvonne said to me, right, you can do the news. And basically the same as Hugh Hardy said, do news if you want to, but don't let it interfere with your programmes. And that was the deal. You know, so you're able to try things out. You're able to interview people. You're getting tip-offs about stuff. You're writing things down on the back of an envelope. Everything written in longhand. We didn't go into typing or whatever.
Yeah, sure. Even in the ads, we used to read the ads live.
Yeah.
Put on a background thing and just read, get a piece of paper, given a piece of paper, read the ad. You did the ad and you put on the next disc or whatever. That was what it was about.
After we were raided, Radio Dundalk.
Yeah, the first one. Yeah.
But Carousel and Dundalk were raided within a week of each other. Okay. We were quite powerful, and we never got back to the power. So Radio Dundalk kind of struggled on. Carousel was back in full power. They were winning the battle.
Yeah.
So My old friend that I had started, given the summer job, started telling me about a station opening up in Drogheda, that Yvon MacDonald and a few people were interested, and had a very small transmitter. So I was doing a bit like what Richard was doing. I was doing a bit Radio Dundalk in the morning and Radio Drogheda, as it was, local Radio Drogheda. And eventually I joined it full-time around Christmas, and it just went from strength to strength.
So Christmas, which year would this have
been? 1978.
Yeah.
And it just went from strength to strength. You know, I met Michael Common. He was one of the first people who welcomed me to it when I came. And, of course, you had Gavin Duffy. You had a very small, what I we would say about those days was you had a very small, dedicated team. And we were very well looked after. And he, not so many bodies, like the station where I would work in now, maybe 30 people. You know, you had about five or six people doing the same job now, being well looked after.
The time that Radio Carousel was on the air, and whatever it was called, 7 days or Today Tonight, came down to do a feature on pirate radio, and they came to interview us, and there was 12 people in the entourage from RTE television. And I remember looking round saying, because I think there might have been six of us, and I said, if we're raided today, we haven't a hope. We're outnumbered by about 3-1. I hope to God they don't raid us. But one of the times they did raid Radio Carousel, which was in the penthouse, which sounds very fancy, under a roof in a shopping centre. And they burst in one door, and one of the guys working at a makeshift desk, we knew we were going to be raided. And the transmitter was taken out, and it was a boxy-type desk. It was put into the middle of this box-type desk. He pretended to be typing away, doing work. The P&T guys came rushing in one door, said, "Where are they? Where are they?" And he said, "They went that way, they went that way." And he pointed to a door which led them out onto the roof. And they all bailed out onto the roof, then realised they'd been hoodwinked and came back in, searched the place, but they couldn't find any transmitter. There was no incriminating evidence.
Was this in Boyneside?
This was in Radio Carousel.
And do you remember roughly when that was, that raid?
Well, that's the second raid, Richard.
I think that was the first raid.
Yeah.
Yous would have been raided a week after us, yes. I think, because we complained it was unfair. Yeah.
And there was warrants issued.
If
there was warrants
done, we
anyway.
Had to be done.
That's it. We knew. Yeah. I mean, we had to be done sooner or later.
Yeah.
But they were heavy-handed. The guy had a sledgehammer.
He broke the door.
Yeah.
We had a steel door.
It was in the summer. We were only on air, really.
I had actually come out at 11, and same Gavin Duffy went down to get his breakfast, and his last record was still on, Kate Bush, The Man with the Child in His Eyes. I put on my theme tune. Next thing I heard, a tap on the door, and I thought it was Gavin back with his breakfast. So I dashed back, opened the door, and back to just introduce. Next thing I heard a voice saying, "Don't say anything." You know, I looked behind, I saw this guy with a sledgehammer and a guard. And
a sledgehammer?
He had a sledgehammer. And the transmitter was in the water tower. They couldn't find it. So I went over to the sink, and there was a switch. And I hit the switch. And next thing, he had a radio with a little signal thing on. Next thing, went shh. And he said, panic ensued. And I said, "Yeah, they're gone with the transmitter, forget it, you know." And then the man looked behind, he saw the switch, switched it back on. So that was my bluff was blown. But they asked everywhere. We were in a hotel room, "Where is the transmitter?" And so they blew in the door next to a fellow called Tumulty asleep. He was one of the barmen. He didn't know what happened. And the guy who owned the hotel lived in Simon's. He lived in an apartment at the far side, lovely big door. He said, "Who's in that big door down there?" He was going down with the sledgehammer. So at that point, we said, "No." I think actually he may have busted Simon's door.
I think he did. I remember hearing anecdotally,
Simon
he had.
Said, tell him how it is. You know, I'd want my hotel wrecked. Yeah. So.
And when did you move to Boyneside then?
As I said, it was later on in the year.
Okay.
That was, about, as I said, July. The 12th.
And did you stay there then until 1988? Until the
I did indeed, yeah. But I worked, I set up other stations. I built a lot of transmitters around the country.
You know, I remember you contributing to the Radio West Anorak's programme, talking about various things that you were involved with.
And every time he'd ring me up on a Sunday, and he would tell me what station we built. And but Boyneside expanded quite a lot. We had quite a large operation at the border.
Yeah. Tell us about the expansion, because I know you had a Northern Ireland version of the station as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
That I think didn't broadcast the Angelus.
Well, we actually pirated the idea from Radio Carousel, who had opened up a station in Navan, and I think they'd won in Drogheda at one stage.
Yeah.
So we said, we should do that. That's a good idea. So he linked them with FM, and then eventually the one at Newry, because we were broadcasting from Drogheda into the north, it didn't really sound right.
Okay.
So we decided to open up a kind of a satellite version of it. And that was nearly full time. It would take programmes, you know, during the day, bring them in on the FM.
But you were based just over the border, just in the south, presumably.
Just past the customs post, inside the actual border. Not very far now, so say within 100 yards.
Were you in the north or the south then? You were in the south.
In the south. About 100 yards.
Eddie Caffrey, Michael Hughes and Richard McCullen of Boyneside Radio and Radio Carousel in County Louth. We'll bring you more from that interview in next month's programme, or you can hear it in its entirety on pirate.ie.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
No radio station would exist without its broadcast engineers, and the pirates were no exception. Although the smaller stations were sometimes held together by soldering iron, and on-air quality was pretty poor. An often overlooked aspect of radio history is transmission, so we're delighted to bring you part of an interview now with engineer Gerry O'Reilly, who kept up to 50 pirate stations from the border to Cork on the air during the 1980s and beyond.
Well, I worked in the TV and radio business from the early, well, from the mid 70s, and that time, just in the early days, just black and white, and quite a lot of people would have been getting in radios, because electricity was only in the rural part of the country for about 14 or 15 years. So some of them would have been still using the old battery radio. So that's how I got involved. It was in the family. I had an uncle in the business, and he would go out and put in a radio and put up an outdoor aerial, which was a piece of wire and an earth. So we became very interested in it at school, and then I started serving my time when I was 18 in the communications radio business, and that's how it developed into the transmission around about 1980. And then I built a little transmitter at home, and people that time were very, very nervous of the law, and my mother was very upset about it, and she got on to the local priest and contacted the local county councillor at the time, and they came and visited me, and so I had to cease broadcasting. So then a few of the stations, like Nova, some of those I think came on, and Independent Radio Drad, I think it was. And then we were tuned, and we decided to get involved in it more so. So I met up with Eddie Caffrey. I met up with Peter Gibney and Tony Mulligan back, I think it was around about 81 or 82, while they were setting up CCR in Cavan. So I got involved in it from then on. I worked with Eddie Caffrey. So it became a full-time career then from then until the 90s.
So what stations would you have been working with in those days?
Starting off, it would have been CCR in Cavan. Then there was Breffni Radio in Cavan. And I'd done a little bit for Ironside Radio. And then I went, I set up, Breffni Radio in Cavan set up another station down in Longford. I just can't think of the name of it at the moment. I think it could have been called Midland Radio. 10:35 was the frequency on AM. And then I set up another one in Longford, which was the old ARD transmitter, arrived down in Longford, and a fella called Noel Chastity got it. And after that, the first one I done was NWCR in Buncrana, County Donegal. That was on 1116 kilohertz. And after that, then I was involved with Hometown Radio in Monaghan, which was in Castle Blaney, 981 kilohertz. Big M Radio. I didn't build the original transmitter for those, of course, but I maintained it and done all the aerial work and all that, and the links. Would have built a lot of those. Then after that was Paul Claffey down in Midwest Radio in Mayo. Eddie Caffrey built the transmitter, and I installed and built the links on 1332 was the frequency there. And then we built another one away down the west for him on 1233. So with Eddie, I would have been looking after parts of his empire up in the East Coast, was Bynside Radio. And then we had East Coast Radio, which was broadcasting from RD in County Louth. Then there was, I'm trying to go through the early ones first. Over in County Leitrim, you had Melvin Country Radio, which was owned by, I think it was Jerry Farry. And that became Glencoe Radio in Donegal. I looked after that. They were all AM transmitters. Then there was Radio North in Carndun in Donegal on 846, which shared the same frequency in AM as Sunshine Radio in Dublin. And there was another one, I think it could have been called Riverside Radio, another AM, of course, close to Derry City. And then there was, before that was DCR in Letterkenny. That was the first big one, which is now Highland Radio, or some of the DJs will be Highland.
On average, what sort of wattage would we be talking about for most of these stations?
1,000 watts, kilowatt. Then I worked for Sean Kine in Radio West in Mullingar, and he had the old Radio Nova transmitter, which he bought of Chris Carey. And the selling point that Chris Carey had when he sold him that transmitter was, I spoke to Sean this morning about this, Chris Carey told him that the first broadcast ever on the 10 kilowatt transmitter was the announcement that President Kennedy had been shot. The actual transmitter was allegedly have come from Dallas. And that's where, that was the claim to fame that Sean had. After that, then there was a number of different stations started. There was Rainbow Radio up in South County Louth, North County Louth, sorry, on the border, which was Eugene Markey. He was a councillor in the Newry and Mourne, and Ollie McMahon, Big O. Then there was Star Radio in Monaghan, which is still going. Was involved in that. And the maintenance, both installing and the maintenance of all those. And there was another one, Northern Star in Monaghan, or North Star, another AM transmitter. I wasn't heavily involved in that one, but I was about. And then, of course, there was Kiss FM, which was Peter Gibney. It was a transmitter, actually, that was bought from Breffni Radio that was imported from America. And that was installed there. Peter Gibney was involved in that with Miles Johnston. Then there was KITS, K-I-T-S, with Frank McGarty, up in North Monaghan. And then there was the father and son radio down in Carlow, where it was Eric Vaughan, or Eric Griffin, had a station, and then his father had a station. Two of them had a station in one town. Two 500 watt transmitters, 500 AM, and I think they were running 250 watts FM. I'm trying to think, there were so many of them at the time. I think I had read about 47 of them at one time. And actually, I met a gentleman out here today, Dermot Layden. He had one. I set up one for him in Boyle in County Roscommon, which subsequently was moved to Sligo Town. I can't think of the name of them.
After all the time of working on transmitters and transmission signals and all that sort of stuff, did you ever feel inclined to get onto the other side of the microphone?
No, never.
And all those years you spent with all these various stations, you must have come across a few people who have ended up being household names since then.
Oh, yeah. They would have, yeah. I'm trying to think of them. I just can't think of some of them off the top of my head. I remember Frank Mitchell, who's now in, does the weather on UTV. There was a few up northwest. There was Kate, she works for the BBC now. I just can't think of her second name. I'm a bit nervous, so when you're nervous, I can't think.
Not a problem. One of the things that occurred to me is, like, over all those stations, were some of them commercial, some of them community-based, some of them really voluntary?
No, there was none of them voluntary. They were all in it. There was another one down in Ballinasloe called Candy Radio, set up that. And then that was sold to a gentleman in Loughrea in Galway. It was called Galway District Radio. So people used to laugh. They called it the GDR. It was before the Berlin Wall came down. Some of them were run. The ones in Donegal were a commercial success. NWCR, Radio North, and DCR. The ones down the west, the Paul Claffey and Chris Carroll had, were very, very well run, very well organised. And it's, of course, Bynside it's now LMFM or the same people. Sean Kynes, the Mullingar, Sean Kynes always said that he was the biggest station outside of Dublin. He covered from coast to coast because he had another AM in Galway City, and he had a number of FMs located throughout the country.
Whenever a number of technical blokes get sitting around, there are always good horror stories that are well polished up to be told. Do you have any good ones yourself?
I have, but I'd prefer not to tell.
Oh, no nights running away from people in vans at the middle of the night.
No, we used to have, especially working along the border, there was two stations. One was the radio Rainbow site. It was very close to the border. I remember going in one night and the British Army were on the site. And the same happened on the NWCR, had a fill-in transmitter in South Donegal beside a town near Castledergan, County Tyrone. And we had the similar incident happened at that site where the British moved in on the site. Other than that, I've never, those funny things happened, of course. But in general, I've never seen any major disaster.
Looking back at the stations, do you remember if many of them carried, say, news or had their own reporters or anything like that?
Oh, they had, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Some of them were very professional. NWCR and Donegal had the full news crew there. Of course, they took the news from the teletext. And they weren't very... The timing used to be a bit out, so some... journalist in the Derry Journal wrote one time that it was called, the reason why it was called NWCR was because it was no watches or clocks radio, that they didn't bother with times.
I like the sound of that, all right. In the earlier days, visits by the department to ask you to cease broadcasting were common. Were you ever on site when anything like that happened?
No, never was. I was close, all right, but never was.
And do you remember at all the, I suppose, 31st of December in 1988, when all the unlicensed broadcasters were asked to cease and desist? Do you remember where you were at the time?
I do, surely, yeah. I visited Breffni Radio in Cavan. I went then to Radio West in Mullingar. From Radio West, I went to, I think it was Q102, or the Q102 closed down the day before, I forget. And then we went to the radio up at the border, Rainbow Radio, because I had set up another radio station down in County Cork, in Mallow, and lads from Mallow came up to play the night out at that station at the border at Killeen in North County Louth. So that's where I was for the remainder of that night. I travelled home then.
Now, you involved yourself in the transmitter side. Did you do the studio equipment side of things?
Some of it, yeah. especially the smaller ones, would have done all the studio equipment, just the mixing desk. And that time, two tape decks, two turntables, compressor. It was fairly basic equipment.
And then things would have stepped up a gear when people started using FM.
They did, yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember the first CD, the first CDs that came out up in Radio North in Carrandon and Donegal. There was a DJ there called Packy Bradley, and Packy never seen a CD before, and he, of course, he tried to play it on the record player. And there was, I'm sure there's loads of stories about those of incidents, yeah.
And then they would have moved on to, well, I suppose more expensive transmission gear, and Optimods and processors like that coming into the game.
Some of them had Optimods. Well, Radio West had an Optimod and a lot of processing. KITS and Mono in Town had a lot of processing. And, of course, KISS FM. KISS FM was very, very, was very professional in every way. You know, they had professional studios, transmitters were all state-of-the-art, sites were all good.
And I suppose, can you remember the date when you first, leaving aside your own homebrew transmitter that you had at home that your mum called in the authorities on you, that the first transmitter you turned on for another station?
I suppose the first big one I turned on, I suppose, would have been that was involved independently myself, would have been NWCR in Donegal.
Do you realise how many people have listened to your work?
Oh, I would. I remember when we set up the one in Donegal, we were testing for a day or two, and I remember walking down the street of Buncrana that night, and there was a queue of about 150 people waiting to get into the studio to apply for jobs, because they had nothing. They didn't even, RT was quite bad up there. So, you know, the signal strength was from the Midlands up to the Northwest. So the only thing they had up that part of the country was BBC Radio File. So the amount of excitement that it generated was unbelievable. It was just amazing. And it was nice to see that. You know, you don't get that nowadays because it's all iPads and internet and, you know, there's no excitement.
There's still a bit of romance left in radio, though, isn't there?
Maybe, for some of us. Not for the youngsters, I don't think.
Dear. You mentioned so many stations. You mentioned 40-plus stations that you've been involved with over the years. And when you look at, you know, the coverage you've talked about, obviously, the home stomping ground of Cavan, Monaghan and Louth. A lot of sterling work in Donegal, which you said was starved of signals, and across then into Galway, Sligo. You said Westmeath, Rosslare,
Mayo.
Mayo, yeah, and down into
Cork
as well.
Charlo.
Is there a county you missed?
Well, I didn't do very much. I worked in Kerry and Limerick. I'd done the Galty Radio in Limerick for John Reardon from Breffni Radio. He had a station in Limerick called Galty Radio on 792, which was the same frequency as Radio File in Derry. And it was an excellent, the site was excellent for transmission. So that was it. Limerick, Galway, I never done anything. Limerick, Kerry, I worked in Kerry, Cork. I never done anything in Waterford or Wexford or Wicklow. I don't know, or looked after a few little ones here in the city, Dublin. I can't remember the names of them. They were small FMs.
Gone into the mists of time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you ever find yourself driving around the country and remembering sights?
Oh, of course, yeah, yeah. Back in the mid-90s, Dennis O'Brien approached me about sights. And I asked him, what did he want sights for? He says, well, you would know a lot of sights. I said, I do. I says, why do you want them? He says, for the new mobile telephone license. But I says, you don't have it. You don't have a mobile phone license. He says, but somebody's going to have it. He says, I want to know where the sites are. So he was thinking ahead.
He was?
Yeah, yeah.
Engineer Gerry O'Reilly speaking to Walter Hegarty about keeping pirate radio stations on air throughout the country during the 1980s. One larger station Gerry mentioned was Radio West in Mullingar, which by 1988 was claiming to be available in most of Ireland and was even calling itself West National Radio 3. Here's a recording which includes a promo aimed at Galway advertisers. We heard this before on wireless, but I think it's worth repeating because it shows how ambitious some of the pirate stations had become just before they went off the air.
On 702 kHz AM and stereo FM nationwide, this is West National Radio 3.
The 6 o'clock news, I'm Kevin Palmer.
WESP.
They're listening in Loughrea and Galway and Gort. They're tuned in Tuam and Craughwell and Aircourt and Ballinasloe, Athenry, Oranmore, Portumna, Moycullen, Glenamaddy and Dunmore. Fact is, when it comes to the county of Galway, West National Radio 3 leads the field. And that's great news if you're in business in the West. Every single one of over 2,000 square miles and thousands of pairs of ears listening to your message, day or night. If you want to talk to Galway, talk to Radio West Sales on 57459. That's Galway 57459. Because advertising on Radio West works. You're listening to it.
Radio West, coast to coast. It's more than music.
It's 11 and a half minutes past six. Today's Landlink report is from Mullingar Mart, where there was a bigger sale than usual and trade was maintained for quality beef and store bullocks. Trade for quality heifers was also maintained.
Radio West, or West National Radio 3, as it was calling itself in 1988, expanding its broadcasts to Galway. So what does all this material mean and why does it matter? On New Year's Eve itself, 30 years to the day since the pirates were silenced, I had a chat with Brian Green about why we set up pirate.ie.
Pirate.ie, it's Brian Green, and in my company is...
John Walsh.
And neither of us have been interviewed for the pirate.ie archive, so this isn't to suffice as our one-to-one kind of interview, but let's just kind of... It is the 31st of December, 2018. This day, 30 years ago, the pirate radio stations closed down en masse in Ireland. We've been bringing audio and people, which is probably more important than audio, and artifacts together over the last 6 months or more. And I'm going to ask you, you know, what have we learned? What has it all been about? Why are we doing this?
Well, I suppose, why are we doing it, Brian? The first answer to that is because we feared that valuable information would be lost. There are a lot of recordings out there that have been digitised. There's a lot of material available online already. Some of it is from us. More recently, there's obviously the DX archive. There's a lot of individual collections on Mixcloud and on SoundCloud and on YouTube and various other places. And that's all out there and that's all available and that's all in the public domain. We've tried to bring some of that together and try to add our own material to that as well. And that's all important because I think the material that you have, particularly Brian, is very left field. And we have some of the small radio operators, some of the more unusual stations. There's, you know, we're coming down with recordings of Radio Nova, of Q102, of Sunshine, of ERI. We have more unusual stuff in pirate.ie, which is good. So I think, you know, we've, if I can say modestly, that we've contributed to knowledge of some of the smaller stations and more unusual operators and more unusual recordings. But I think in a bigger sense, what we've done is to talk to people, to do these oral histories, as you've been saying all week, to gather together information that really is at risk of being lost, people's memories of the time, people's recollections of what they were doing 30 years ago, 35 years ago, 40 years ago, as reliable as that can be. And that's one of the things I think that's come out is that, you know, obviously there's no one way of telling a story. People have different memories of different things. So perhaps we can try and bring together all of the elements and the disparate parts of the story by getting as many views as possible. And I suppose then also what I've been trying to do in the interviews that I've done, as you've heard, is to get a sense of what these radio people, these people who have radio in their blood, like ourselves, in their DNA, what they think of the spectrum today and what they think of the of what's going on today and where radio is and what its future prospects might be. So I think that's where we're at and what why we're here.
Here's a kind of an academic question, which we probably won't answer today, but I wonder if listening to what you just said there is, does an Agfa C90 cassette fade faster than one's own memory? And it is interesting because we do come up against this kind of people scratching at the edge of what their memory will allow them to recall as to what happened 30 years ago. And as time goes on, obviously it fades, and as magnetic tapes, time goes on, they fade too. I wonder, from what we have heard and what we've asked people and what they've told us, what is the overall picture, the overall sense of what pirate radio meant to a nation, to Ireland?
Well, I think one thing that came out very strongly, Brian, and we even heard this when we met last night in the Sands Hotel in Portmarnock, at the site of Sunshine Radio, obviously, about 10 or 12 of us got together and stood together at the spot at 6 p.m. where Sunshine closed down 30 years ago yesterday. I think what we said yesterday, and we've been saying it all week, one of the biggest themes that came out is how pirate radio, in a way, was part of Ireland changing from black and white to colour. And that sounds very simplistic in a way. And of course, pirate radio wasn't the only reason for that. And it wasn't the only cause of that. Social change was underway since the 60s, but pirate radio was very much a part of that. And pirate radio gave people colour in what was a rather drab landscape, a rather grim situation economically and socially. And, you know, through the 70s and especially into the 80s then, how pirate radio really shone and created this multicoloured, you know, radio landscape. And even we were mentioning earlier about, you know, how a lot of gay people were involved in pirate radio as well, and how that was tolerated within the radio sector. And other people who've been involved in radio at that time have commented on that. And again, that was almost like a safe haven or a safe space in what was a pretty repressive environment. And I think you can probably say the things about other aspects of radio in the 80s as well. And we have examples on the pirate.ie website of radio involving other minorities at the time, and Margareta Darcy's work in my own adopted city of Galway on Radio Pirate Women, with, you know, with women's groups and with travellers and so on. So I think radio was definitely part of creating spaces for minorities, but also it was about creating fun and about creating bright lights and entertainment in what was a very drab and staid and boring radio landscape. So for me, that's one of the big themes that has come out of our interviews since October and even before then.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
Myself and Brian Green talking about pirate.ie and our plans for a sustainable audio archive of Irish pirate radio. We're adding material all the time, so check out our site if you want to hear more. And that's it for the January edition of Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. We'll be back on the first Monday in February with more radio news and features. But in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt and facebook.com/wirelessflirt. All our programmes are also available online at wirelessflirt.wordpress.com. Until the next time, this is John Walsh wishing you good listening.